Hello and welcome to another episode of Brewing with Brewskies, a magic podcast about drinking beers and brewing magic decks. I'm joined this week, as I am every week, by my co-host Sean.
Howdy, y'all.
And we're here to discuss some magic with you guys. Let's start out this week, as we do every week, by talking about what beers we're drinking. Sean, what beer are you drinking this week?
I am drinking Yuengling Premium, which is the Yuengling Brewery's answer to stuff like Budweiser and Miller.
It's kind of like the piss beer of the Yuengling brand.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's not as heavy as lager.
Yeah.
Like after I drink like half a lager, it's like, oh, my stomach is completely full now. This is kind of a little bit lighter.
Halfway between Yuengling and Yuengling Light.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Hey, it's a nice classic of just, you know, and we need a 30 rack, or I guess they come in 24 racks.
Yeah, they come in 24s.
Yeah. So you just gotta grab something to have beer in the house. This week I am drinking Francis Connor Weiss beer.
Brewery is that from?
Which is a wheat beer brewed and bottled by, oh Jesus, Spaten Brau in Munich, Germany. You knew I'd mess that up. That's why you made me answer that question.
I absolutely did.
That's, dude, Sean's on the hating Doug train tonight. Let's see if it shows up any more in the podcast.
Doug hate train never stops, man.
It keeps going. There's no stations for that one. It just goes all across the country, apparently. All right. Well, yeah, there's a wheat beer that's, I don't even know how many alcohols it's got in it, but it's good, smooth. I prefer Hoegaarden as a wheat beer, but it's got smooth flavor and a good bready wheat taste.
Yeah, I'm not usually a big fan of wheat beers. I tend to stay away from them, so.
It's kind of like the opposite spectrum from like a stout, where, you know, you have a lot of heaviness. This is a lot lighter.
Yeah.
And yeah, I prefer the lighter, different flavored beers, I guess I'd say, rather than the heavy stouts. All right. Let's do our format rundown, where we look at the top decks in the formats of at least modern and standard. Actually, we're not talking about standard this week, but we can still run down the standard metagame. Hasn't changed much since last week. We still have Ramunap Red at the top of the format, followed by Mono Black Zombies, and then Black Green Constrictor, the Snek deck. Teemer Energy coming in fourth. Marvelous Marvel, basically. We have Mardu Vehicles, the classic. Blue Red Control, which a murderous of a control deck. Green Red Ramp, which relies on Hour of Promise and Hour of Devastation to control the board and ramp. And then we have Mono Red Eldrazi, an Eldrazi deck similar to the one you were talking about the other week. Looks a little bit more low to the ground this time, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not as, yeah, it doesn't, they're not as top end heavy and more with more of the like Eldrazi mimics and matter reshapers and stuff.
So yeah, like you said, there's not really a whole lot of changes. The only change that I see is that Blue Red Control is no longer splashing black for Nicol Bolas.
Yeah, that's kind of like a fringe thing already anyway, but you know, it's kind of something that can come and go depending on what flavor you're playing. Another interesting one here is Mono White Eldrazi, which I really like. It's got Walking Ballista, Thraben Inspector, Glory Brown Initiate.
Is Walking Ballista just an auto include in every deck now?
It seems like it. It seems like it. There's no real synergy here with it other than the fact that it's a colorless card that you can, you know, play in every deck pretty much. I think it's good against the X ones of the red decks.
The red decks and the zombies. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that's kind of seems like what it's there for. Also, like in this one, Eldrazi Displacer is kind of the main reason to go into white.
Since
you have the basically dual lands, which are colorless and a color, that are the deserts in every
Yeah,
color, so.
I do like that the untapped deserts come in untapped, and they also produce colorless mana, so you can cast Eldrazi's off of them.
Yeah, that's the main thing. It looks like they're not even running. I mean, the usual package is Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher, but this one's not. At least this list
Most
isn't
of them
playing.
are running Matter Reshaper as well.
Yeah, but the usual draw is the 1-2 punch of Thought Not into Smasher,
Right.
which is, take their removal spell out of their hand, and then all of a sudden next turn you're swinging for 9 power. No, I was considering like what colors to build like a mono X color Eldrazi, and I like the red. I was considering going to white, and now that I see this, that I like that too. And we just need to fill out the rest of the rainbow with
Yeah, standard seems pretty wide open right now.
mono X Eldrazi. All right, let's go to the modern metagame. Here we have to do a quick rundown. There doesn't seem to be many changes here. It's the usual suspects of Affinity, and then Grixis Death Shadow, Titan Shift, which has moved down in the rankings. And then we have Eldrazi Tron. We have Gift Storm, which is a classic. Burn, another classic. Blue-white control moving up, and then also Tron. Basic.
Green black.
This one's green-black, but that's another flavor concern where it's just like, well, you can run green-black, you can run green-white, you can run green-red. It's just kind of where do you want your removal to sit at?
It seems like most people are just going colorless and doing Eldrazi Tron.
Yeah, the Eldrazi Tron being all colorless does help. I've played a little bit of, a mashup of Eldrazi Tron and regular Tron just to have the splash of green to play Worldbreaker and Ancient Stirrings,
Yeah.
because Ancient Stirrings is still very powerful. Also, Sylvan Scrying. I found that to be a decent thing. It's kind of in the vicinity of. You can kind of build it however you want, and it may or may not work out for you.
So I was watching results for a tournament today, and I didn't really see very much affinity in the pool, by and large. There was a lot of Death Shadow and a lot of Etron.
Yeah.
And a good amount of Gift Storm as well.
Huh.
Gift
Well, that.
Storm is just really good against the Tron decks, and just with the big Tron presence at that particular tournament, I think the Gift Storm players kind of took advantage.
Yeah, gifts. It's we've kind of got ourselves a three-way, a rock paper scissors format here with Death Shadow, Eldrazi Tron, and Gift Storm as a combo deck, where Gift Storm has a great matchup against Eldrazi Tron because they don't have a lot of early game interaction other than their Chalice on one, but.
Right, but Gift Storm doesn't care too much about a Chalice on one. Chalice on two, it does care about, but
Yeah, but that means they can't get that until unless they turn three Tron,
right.
and that's pretty much their only hope against that. But Gift Storm does lose pretty hard to Grixis Death Shadow with their amount of removal, counter spells, and hand disruption.
And the fact that they can get early threats down.
Yeah, they put a clock on you really quickly.
Death Shadow likes the matchups where its life total doesn't matter, like Storm and Ad Nauseam.
Yeah, it does kind of prey upon those kind of non-interactive combo decks. Whereas, and then Eldrazi Tron can beat Grixis Death Shadow just with Chalice on one, shuts off a majority of their deck, and also the Eldrazi Tron creatures typically outclass the Delve creatures in Death Shadow.
Right. Well, at least match them.
Yeah. So it's kind of a rock, paper, scissors format in that regard, but then you have stuff
But
like.
by no means are there only three playable decks. This isn't standard, Doug.
Yeah, exactly. Well, things like Tron have a good matchup against, Death Shadow and Storm, but not necessarily against Eldrazi Tron.
Well, like I see Titan Shift here in the third as the third most used deck. Burn, Blue White Control, and then a little further down the list, we've got Jeskai Control, Merfolk. Counters Company has been slowly dying away.
It's kind of doing a it's kind of rising and falling. It hasn't won any big tournaments yet, and it's just kind of top eighted or 5-0'd a couple leagues.
It just doesn't have a great Death Shadow matchup, and doesn't have a very good E-tron matchup either.
It's kind of, I don't want to say it's on the slow end because it's very, it can counter off, combo off very quickly, but being a creature based combo deck does have its disadvantages.
Well, with four of Fatal Push in the Grixis deck, that makes life a little difficult.
Yeah, a little hectic. Also, you know, its counter magic can disrupt their collected companies, and also its hand
Right.
disruption. So it's kind of not looking at the best place. Bantel Drazi's moved down a little ways from it used to be in the top.
Yeah, because Tron using the Tron lands for your Eldrazi is just better.
Yeah, that's a thing that's come up. We've kind of seen recently. Okay, well that's. And are we talking about Legacy this week? I don't think so. I think it's just all Modern all the time today. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
And
there
the.
haven't been any big legacy events for a while,
Yeah.
so, and there won't be any for a while.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's start out with the decks we've been playing this week. I think I'm gonna go first because your deck that you've been playing this week ties into your what you want to brew around. So I'm going to talk really quick about the Bant Alarm deck that I talked about last week on the show.
It's like deja vu all over again.
Right? It's so the version that I described last week was throw a whole bunch of combo pieces at the wall and see which ones stick. You know, playing Midnight Garden, Presence of Gond, the main one, Intruder Alarm and Steward of Solidarity, having Thraben Doomsayer in there, using Idyllic Tutor and Serum Visions to kind of fix your draws and whatnot. So I played a couple games with this, and it's seems really powerful when it gets off the nut draw of, you know, land, Noble Hierarch into Steward of Solidarity into Intruder Alarm with, you know, a Blossoming Defense backup, and then you just combo off and make a ton of tokens. But when it doesn't just do that, or when they can disrupt it easily, it doesn't do anything. It just.
Welcome to the land of all-in combo decks. Here's your visitor packet. We will be along shortly with refreshments.
Hey, I played Kiln Fiend in Modern for the longest time. I know where it's at. So the thing, this didn't work that well, but I think I have a way, I think I know a way to make it work a lot better. And that is taking out a lot of the do nothing cards, stuff like Midnight Guard, Thraben Doomsayer, maybe take out Serum Visions, Blossoming Defense, a Presence of Gond. Take out a lot of those, put in four of collected companies, and just fill the rest of those spots with just good value creatures. Still leaving in the four of Steward and maybe four of Intruder Alarm. Maybe cut that down to three. But then just turning it into a Bant mid-range deck where you can just play your normal value creatures like Kitchen Finks and Voice of Resurgence as just, you know, normal powerful creatures, maybe even do Spell Quellers as just a, you know, a getcha tempo card, and just have the natural, you know, a natural decent mid-range deck, but one that also has the possibility of having a combo finish with Steward of Solidarity and Intruder Alarm. Other things that you can also do with this kind of shell is you can maybe go instead of Idyllic Tutor, you can use like a Drift of Phantasms and have one Intruder Alarm and one what's the enchantment that combos with Knight of the Reliquary?
Retreat to Coral Helm.
Yeah. So you could have one Retreat to Coral Helm, one intruder alarm, and then if you whichever one you get in your hand, you can then either idyllic tutor or drift of phantasm into the enchantment you need, and then bam, just play that. And also you could have that with eternal witness, where you can get back the enchantment if you need to.
So it just sounds kind of like a Nightfall deck with your combo finish put in it.
Yeah, you can go Nightfall. That's one of the options. Just building it like Little Kid Green White or Bant, and just doing what is already a decent strategy, and just combined it with a combo finish.
Right.
So yeah,
Yeah,
that.
it's it, every time that I've played Nightfall, I run into the problem of, well, their creatures are eventually going to outclass mine.
Yeah, well, and your creatures are going to get outclassed or out aggroed pretty quickly.
But now you have a way to make it go wide so that you can just pretty much push the I win button.
Exactly. You can just have an I win button in Steward of Solidarity and Intruder Alarm, where Steward's just sitting out there doing not a whole lot, and then land an Intruder Alarm, and all of a sudden you have a board presence that they can't deal with. And that's kind of the idea of any mid-range deck, is that you just get incrementally large board presence until it overwhelms the opponent, and they can't individually deal with all of the ways you're attacking them.
Right, so you go tall until you can't go tall anymore, and then you start going wide with your stewards.
Yeah, and I think that will cut down, taking out a lot of the do nothing cards and putting in a lot of just solid cards. What's the elephant that can't get discarded from your hand? What's his name?
Loxodon Smiter.
Loxodon. I couldn't think of how they pronounced elephants in Magic.
Yeah, 'cause we can't have cats or elephants or anything else. We have to call it something magical sounding.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just be like, well, these are the tiger people. No, they're the Leonin. Well, these are the elephant people. No, they're the Loxodon. Yeah, okay, we get it, Magic. No, I think going more in that direction can, and also putting in like a two different windows of combo, and without drastically reducing your hit percentage with Collected Company, using Drift of Phantasms, which can still be hit off Collected Company, not preferred, but it's at least a hit rather than a complete blank, which Idyllic Tutor is.
Right.
Yeah, so that's.
Now that you have Knight of the Reliquary, you can put some utility lands in, such as Ghost Quarter and maybe Gavinny Township. But
Yeah.
with 21 land, I don't know how many times you're going to be activating a Gavinny Township.
Yeah, well, like 21 land, that's kind of like in the low end of hitting four drops, and I guess it's not that low, especially because it basically breaks down to 29 mana sources, which is in the range of hitting five drops, five and
Right.
six. So as long as not a lot happens to your birds and nobles, you're at the 26, or you're at the ability to cast six drops, which is tutor with Drift of Phantasms or Idyllic Tutor into an Intruder Alarm and play it in the same turn.
Right.
The other thing that's interesting about this is that making a more creature focused deck, even if you leave it with just four Intruder Alarms and cut out all the instants and sorceries other than Path and Collected Company, basically what you do is your creature count becomes in like the 30-ish range, so you can untap your creatures with Intruder Alarm as often as you need to, whereas they might end up being in a situation where they can't untap a creature on their upkeep or on their untap, because they and or not untap at all because they can't cast a creature,
Right.
making use of the symmetrical effect of Intruder Alarm is also another good reason to run a lot more creatures. But yeah.
Yeah, just leave it up, play with it, and let us know how it goes.
Yep. Another thing about making it more creature heavy is you can also then tone your sideboard to be a lot more creature focused.
Right, so instead of, say, Blessed Alliance, you would have just a creature in there.
Probably like Core Firewalker in that slot, and then stuff like instead of negates, probably Glenalendra Archmage,
Right.
and it's just stuff along that line that where you're still playing creatures, but and then definitely cut out the Graft Digger's Cage from the sideboard because that would not make Collected Company work very well.
Well, we've seen before that you're not averse to running Nonbos in your decks.
I'm not entirely averse to it, but as long as they're not actually destroying the combo, I'm okay with running non-synergies, but not exactly with complete non-bows. Difference being, like Thalia and Collected Company, it just makes it a little bit harder to cast Collected Company. Graft Diggers in Collected Company makes all of your Graft Diggers cages cut, or all of your Collected Companies shut off.
Right. Well, the utility of using something like a Graft Digger's Cage that has a symmetrical effect like that is that it's going to hurt them more than it's going to hurt you. And if one of your engines is cut off by your hate card, then it's hurting you more than it's hurting them.
Yeah, so yeah, that's not a good reason to run that. So take that out of the board. I'll probably edit this deck so it's more in line with what I have in mind. So the link in the description. Actually, I'll probably copy this to a new link so that the link in the description will lead to the new deck instead of the old one. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking of with that. And it's kind of like I learned that. The best openers were ones where you went Steward of Solidarity into present or Intruder Alarm, but any of the other draws where you had like Midnight Guard, they didn't do anything. So Midnight Guard Presence of Gone combo is also a thing, but I think the Steward of Solidarity Intruder Alarm combo is just a better use of your time and deck slots.
Right, so those two combos are both two card combos, but they don't really work with each other at all.
No. Presence of Gond works with Intruder Alarm and like a Mana Dork.
Or even a Steward of Solidarity.
Yeah.
Or just basically anything. I
Yeah.
think Midnight Guard was just in there so you didn't have to have Intruder Alarm, but
Yeah,
I
but.
think you're right in cutting it, and it just doesn't do enough by itself.
Right. And I think having one 2-card combo that. Both sides of it kind of do their own thing. Steward of Solidarity still makes a token. So that's, it exerts to make a token, but you can just create a chump blocker at any time you would need. And then as soon as you slam a Intruder Alarm, it's just off to the races.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how Bant Alarm's looking. It didn't work in its first iteration, but hopefully it'll work a lot better in its next iteration. I can't imagine putting in a whole bunch of new cards or good cards would make it worse, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, brewing is just an ever-evolving process.
Yeah, and looking at what good other good blue or Bant or green white decks are using, gives you a good area to go from so that you know what would be actually good cards to put in those slots rather than just putting whatever you want in those. Obviously, you can always put whatever you want in anything. That's the beauty of Magic.
Yeah, sleeve up 60 basic islands. How can you lose?
It's only if they're counterfeit, then you can loot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why I love playing 5-path DQ deck. It's a classic. You get to play all the paths and then still lose from disqualification.
Right.
All right. Well, that's about all I have on this one. Sean, why don't you tell us about what you've been playing this week?
Well, I've been playing a deck that's built around one of my favorite cards ever, Gifts Ungiven. It is an Esper Gifts deck, and most of the time, what you're going to try to be doing is getting an Obsidian Ghost Council in the graveyard, reanimating it with Goryeo's Vengeance. So the way this works is when you cast Goryeo's Vengeance and then it resolves, it makes a delayed triggered ability that triggers on your end step. Obzedat Ghost Council also has its own trigger that removes it from the battlefield. So since they're triggering at the same time, you get to stack it however you want. You just stack it so that Obzedat's trigger resolves first, and then you don't have to exile it forever. Then you just have an Obzedat Ghost Council. There, the other reanimate targets in here are obviously Iona and Elishnorn, along with Unburial Rites. It's pretty much the most obvious thing to do with a Gifts Ungiven.
Yeah, you can. You don't have to search for exactly four. You can just choose to find two and then choose to not find the other two.
Right, so when it was, when Gifts Ungiven was first printed, it said search your library for four cards with different names. However, in the tournament rules, whenever you're trying to find a card, you can fail to find, and it still worked under that. But it has since been eroded to say search your library for up to four cards.
Yep.
So, no more ambiguity.
Did you know Gifts Ungiven is illegal in Vintage? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. I thought it was restricted.
Oh, I guess that's how they do it. Restricted in Vintage.
Yes.
That kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, because the Storm decks would use Gifts to go and get just four different things, four free artifacts.
That explains the resurgence of Storm and Modern with using Gifts Ungiven now.
Right, so with Storm and Modern, what you do is you get three rituals and then Past in Flames, and then whatever they give you from those four, you'll be able to cast your Past in Flames and keep your Storm count going.
Yep.
So back to this deck.
Yep. Sorry about the sidetrack.
Back to this deck. Gifts Ungiven costs four mana, so you obviously need a little bit of a disruption package to make sure you get to that turn. Now, obviously, you could just grab the Obzedat and get it discarded and cast Goryeo's Vengeance on turn three, and then you just have an Obzedat. But most of what you're going to be doing in the early turns is disrupting your opponent with three Inquisitions, one Thoughtseize. That's probably the ideal split for this deck.
So here's an interesting idea. In the games where you have where you might have a Thoughtseize on turn one, wouldn't it be let's say your opening hand is Thoughtseize, Elishnorn or Iona, or even Obzedat and Goryeo's Vengeance, you could Thoughtseize yourself, make yourself discard, you know, Obzedat, and then Goryeo's Vengeance it back the next turn. That way it's a turn two Obzedat.
Right, that's something you can do. I've played a lot of games with this, and that's never happened. Plus, you're only running one Thoughtseize, so that doesn't really happen very often. But that is a line of play that you could follow.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You said that three Inquisitions and one Thoughtseize was the ideal split. You know, having a higher Thoughtseize ratio might make that line of play become more common. Also, maybe not, but, you know.
Yeah, so you want to keep your life total semi-high, mm-hmm. and casting multiple Thoughtseizes, especially since you're running a Snapcaster Mage, casting multiple Thoughtseizes really isn't necessarily where you want to be. You just want to survive for a while.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then rounding out the disruption package is three of Collective Brutality. Now, Collective Brutality is a sort of hinge card in that you can use it as either a discard outlet, which you usually do very often, because there's a lot of dead cards in this deck that you can't maybe use right away. So you can just discard them early to Collective Brutality. And just in case you don't have a Jace, it's just another discard outlet.
Yeah, no, Collective Brutality is it gains extra benefit when you are actively wanting to discard cards.
Right. And that's another thing about this deck. It doesn't really care about your opponent Thoughtseizing or Inquisitioning you, because you want to be discarding cards.
Yeah, it So, like, along that line of thought, like, sometimes you don't, like, there are certain cards you don't want to discard, but is in the majority, like, if they look at your hand and see Jace Obsidat and Goryeo's Vengeance, well, they can just take Goryeo's Vengeance because that's the more problematic card.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of the cards in this deck you would almost prefer in your graveyard.
Yeah, so that's the basic deck. You're just trying to put a fatty in the graveyard and reanimate it. The fact that Gifts Ungiven is in here is mostly just to search up Unburial Rites plus Elishnorn or Iona.
Yeah,
But
and
sometimes you do actually search for four cards.
well, the flexibility of gifts in any deck is kind of the power of it.
Right, because it gets you exactly what you want.
Yeah, it's I've never actually played a gifts deck, so making gifts piles, well.
The trick with Gifts Ungiven is that you need to know what's in your deck at any time.
Yeah, and what's in your deck, and also what combination of cards makes it so that you get what you want and they don't have any good option,
Right.
which is really a deck building restriction that gifts puts on you, which is, okay, I need to, if I gifts ungiven, I need to be able to get this effect as many times as possible in order to get to actually get the effect that I'm looking for. And not just let the opponent discard it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you said
So
you've been playing this deck a little bit. How's it been working for you?
it works pretty well. It's good against Death Shadow, so there's pretty much your barrier to entry. Can it beat Death Shadow? Turns out it can.
That's a good benchmark for the modern format at the moment, you know.
And it's mostly because they're hitting themselves so low that once you get your Obsidian out, you don't even need to attack with it. It's usually just a three-turn clock by itself.
Yeah, that just being able to have Obsidat be able to continuously drain them for the last couple points of life while you're still hitting them with your removal package.
Yeah, and it has the disruption, so it has legs against combo decks. The only things I've really seen where it has a lot of trouble is against the Tron decks, because there's no Ghost Quarters in here, there's no Spreading Seas, there's basically no way to disrupt them getting Tron. Basically, you just have to get either your fatty out first, or you just kind of lose.
Yeah, that's when playing against Tron, you need to be able to be aggressive enough to beat them.
And specifically against Eldrazi Tron, like Elishnorn and Iona are just dead cards. They are not any good at all.
Yeah, Iona does actual zero, and Elishnorn
Well, it's
doesn't
a
do enough.
7/7 flyer.
Well, yeah, but that's about it. And at that point, you could put something different into that slot.
Right. So the way that you beat the Eldrazi Tron decks is with your sideboard, basically.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of looking at now, seeing where you.
Yeah, so I took this list from an online source, and I have Lost Legacy in the sideboard here. Now that could easily be, say, another Surgical Extraction or something along those lines, but having a mono black card that basically you can get rid of a whole bunch of things at once, it's pretty good.
Yeah, just
Rather than something like Slaughter Games, which is red and black.
it's kind of like just nuke a combo.
Yeah, then there's also Supreme Verdict, just in case you need to wrath the board to save yourself from dying.
Seems to me that Supreme Verdict should be both, well, one Supreme Verdict and one Wrath of God. That way you could get both of them with Gifts Ungiven, and you kind of give them the, you know, I either get one of these two wraths or, you know, one of the multiple removal spells.
Yeah,
I either
possibly.
get two wraths or two removal spells or one wrath and a removal spell, which is probably the best, you know, outcome for you.
Right. So you're saying gifts for a verdict, a wrath of God, a fatal push, and a path, and just see what they give you.
Yeah, exactly. Because any way it works out, like you're either getting two removal spells, a removal spell and a wrath, or two wraths, and
Right.
all of those seem like where you want to be.
Well, I think this was built when Eldrazi Tron was still running Warping Whale, or the
Oh,
colorless decks were still running Warping Whale, but since that's not really a thing anymore, you could probably split it between Verdict and Wrath of God. And it also, Wrath of God is much less taxing on your mana base, because even though this is Esper colors, you really need to prioritize your white and black mana over your blue.
Yeah, blue, there's, yeah, blue is,
You only ever need to have one blue source out.
It's mainly a white-black deck splashing blue.
Right. Now it is splashing a decent amount of blue cards, but all of them only have one blue pip, and it gets kind of awkward if you want to say Snapcaster Serum Visions, and you just don't have double blue, so you can't do that. But again, corner cases.
Yeah, Snapcastering Serum Visions is kind of something you either do when you're really ahead or really behind.
Right.
That's, you know, it's not a whole lot of value out of your Snapcaster, but I mean it is value still.
And also the fact that Obsidian Ghost Council has so many white and black pips in it, and you're not always going to be reanimating it. Sometimes you just cast it and it's fine.
Yes.
5/5 for 5.
Yeah, that's the other thing about this deck. I mean, we talk about, you know, having backup plans, you know, in case your plan one doesn't always work. Obsidian Ghost Council only costs 5, so if everything else isn't really going your way and you're just able to, you know, you're just kind of stalling out and spinning your wheels, 5 mana for a 5/5, just bam.
Yeah, and you're running 23 land. You're running Jace Vryn's Prodigy, so you're drawing cards. You have Serum Visions and stuff, so you're pretty much going to hit a land drop pretty consistently.
Yeah, and then you're also running Lingering Souls as, you know, something you can do with your mana.
That's mostly just an insurance policy. Just, put out two chump blockers. Just use my turn three or even turn two. Put out two chump blockers and keep myself alive so that I can cast a Gifts Ungiven or reanimate an Obsidad or something like that.
Yeah, I was talking to my buddy, and he's like, "Yeah, playing with Lingering Souls is kind of like playing with a sideboard card in your main deck.
Right.
Like, it's really good in some matchups and just doesn't do anything in others. But I mean, it's, you know, basically 4 for 1, so."
Yeah, it's four bodies for one card, which is why it's played. So, it's good for chump blocking the non-trample fatties like Tassigur and Gurmag Angler and Death Shadow.
And it also provides a pretty quick clock at 4 damage in the air.
Right, if they're not doing anything, you can put your own threat on the board. And also, you can If you're going for Unburial Rites Elishnorn, then all of a sudden they become 3/3s.
Yeah, that's
And that becomes a real quick clock.
that's another good reason to run them, is because, you know, you Lingering Souls on 3, then Gifts into Elishnorn on Burial Rites, and then on Burial Rites back Elishnorn, and bam, now take 6, next turn take a ton more.
Yeah, so this deck, all in all, is pretty sweet. I like it. I have a lot of fun playing with it.
It looks fun.
I'll probably build it at some point, but I don't really have a whole lot of these cards, so.
Yeah, well, luckily there's a lot of one-ofs.
Yeah, there are. Well, I have the Elishnorn and the Iona from my old Gift Storm days, because that was a sideboard plan that I had, but
Yeah,
other than that, like.
Sean thinks of himself as a hipster. He played Gift Storm before it was cool.
Sure, let's go with that.
Well, you were a hipster on last week's episode too, where you played mono red before it was cool. So, in standard.
Right. Well, mono red and any format is just a solid thing to do.
Yep. All right. Anything else for the Esper Gifts deck?
No, that's pretty much all I had to say about it.
All right. Well, you had some ideas to do things with Gifts Ungiven that weren't this deck.
So, this particular deck kind of just has Gifts Ungiven in it, but it's not really the engine. I want to make a deck that kind of revolves a little more around Gifts Ungiven and just the sheer amount of value that it gives you.
No.
So there's a card from, I believe it's Battle for Zendikar, called Bring Delight.
Oh, yeah.
So that can tutor for gifts and cast it right away. So it's basically just like having more copies of Gifts Ungiven in your deck.
Yeah.
Or you can also just use Bring Delight to get any of the myriad creatures and such that are going to be in the deck. Like the top end is going to be Thrag Tusk, and obviously because Bring Delight has Converge on it, it's going to be a four color deck. But
Yeah, that is a good question. Are you going to go for the 4 or 5 color build, to open up your top end options or other things like that?
probably, but it's probably just going to be base green black, just because green black gets the disruptive elements that you need to get into the mid game and cast your Gifts Ungivens or Bring Delights. So I'll have like Inquisitions and Thoughtseizes, obviously, probably some number of Collective Brutality, because that card is just sweet. Every time I cast a Collective Brutality, I feel good about it. I've never felt bad about having a Collective Brutality in my hand.
Yeah. So with Bring Delight and Gifts Ungiven, that's you're talking about two basically tutor and cast or tutor cards. This deck sounds like it's gonna be basically a whole bunch of one ofs that all can just kind of fit in when they're needed.
Right, so like I already mentioned, Thrag Tusk, we're gonna have Eternal Witness to rebuy your Gifts Ungiven. Stuff like Raven's Crime, which can just absolutely decimate someone's hand.
Oh, that's brutal. Finding some
Urborg.
retrace cards.
Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth.
Oh man. Do you have any specific packages that you have set or have an idea for where you can
So I had. Obviously, there's going to be the Unburial Rites plus Elishnorn slash Iona.
for
And also, if those two are, I don't know, off in La La Land somewhere, you can just do Unburial Rites plus any creature.
Yeah. Or, in like the those two can either those two can be stuck in your hand, obviously, but also sometimes they're just not good. You're looking at basically a toolbox deck that you can use to kind of get any pretty much any card, but only cards that have like a similar effect.
Right, so if I see I'm against, say, an affinity deck and there's Arcbound Ravagers in front of me, I can Bring to Light for, say, a Lindvala and no more Arcbound Ravagers. Or if I gum up the ground, then I can go and get a flyer. Or if I have something that was Thoughtseized from me, I can go and get an Eternal Witness to bring it back, like.
Yeah, so I mean, basically we can just if you have an idea of what you want to do for these, you just basically go down the modern metagame page and you could just have like a package that you could do for each one of them.
Right.
So like you said affinity, you could have something like what's the one that artifact creatures cost one more or unless you sacrifice cost one unless you sacrifice it?
Kotaki.
Kotaki. Yeah, Kotaki War's Wage.
Kotaki may not be a main deck, but it's definitely in the sideboard.
Yeah. Well, another thing is you could do like a wish, possibly a wish package.
The only modern legal wish is Glittering Wish, and it only gets multicolored cards.
Huh.
So it can get me, say, a Bring to Light from the sideboard, but
Well,
that's about it.
here's the idea though, is that you put one of Glittering Wish in the main board, and then if you need to, you can have a wish package in the sideboard where you can tutor, you can gifts or something for a Glittering Wish and like a Noxious Revival and a Eternal Witness,
Right.
and then you cast Wish and you get like a key card out of the sideboard.
Well, I can't really think of any multicolor cards that are really. Now, you could use the Eldrazi Wish and get something like a Thought Knotsayer or a Reality Smasher from the sideboard.
Yeah, but you could do stuff like Fracturing Gust out of the board,
Right, that is a multicolor card.
stuff like
Kitchen Finks is probably going to make the deck, so.
Kitchen Finks or one in the board. Well, I guess you don't need one in the board, but just I mean there's got to be multicolor answers. So
Yeah,
to think.
I haven't thought this out very deeply. I just kind of, like I said before, Gifts Ungiven is probably one of my favorite cards just to play with, and just the sheer versatility of it is great.
Yeah, just a couple quick ideas of things you can have, like Terminate, Is It Staticaster, and Culligan's Command, Maelstrom Pulse, Slaughter Games.
Yeah,
Well,
Maelstrom Pulse probably makes it because, like I said, I think it's going to be base black green with the blue splash for Gifts and Bring to Light.
Split cards like Wear Tear,
Yeah.
maybe Deflecting Palm if that's something you want. Supreme Verdict is a good one to get out of the board. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of options, or like, and then even just not those, like just things you can get out of your deck.
Well, Wish only gets stuff from outside the game.
Well, I know, but you also have, remember, Bring to Light and the
Yeah, I
other one.
also have a million tutors,
Yeah,
so.
so it's just, you have ways of just kind of picking and choosing what cards work best. And if you're running that many multiple colors, you can just have your win condition be like man lands or a creeping tar pit,
Right.
where you find the couple silver bullets that deal with whatever your opponent's trying to do, and then, a few turns later, hit him with a creeping tar pit. Yeah, I mean, I haven't played with Gifts Ungiven, but I've seen it played against me, and you've played it and talked about gifts piles a lot. So the only thing I know about it is just all the.
You're basically giving your opponent the illusion of a choice, but really what you're asking them is, what would you like me to kill you with?
Yeah, cut your own switch.
Yeah, so that's just an idea that I had, just make kind of a value gifts deck rather than the other one, which is kind of a reanimator deck that features gifts.
Yeah. The only thing you'd have to make sure of is that you had multiple instances of anti-graveyard, or what's the best way to say that? Multiple instances of anti-graveyard cards,
Yeah.
anti-enchantment cards, that
Well,
deal with graveyards.
I'm gonna have Abrupt Decay.
Well, okay, yeah, that's kind of a catch-all answer.
Yeah, just seems like. And also, there's gonna be the Disruption package, so hopefully they'll just keep a hand with that in it, and then I get to Thoughtseize it away.
Yeah, and then you also have stuff like, Maelstrom Pulse as targets you can just go fetch up.
Right, so. I mean, and since it's going to be probably a five color deck, like, I can play any or all of the best cards in the game.
Yeah, just build a deck of nothing but the greatest. But that's gonna be an even harder list to break down.
Yeah, so I'm gonna
Since
need a few weeks with this.
yeah,
Try and
you're
put
embarking
something
on
together.
a massive undertaking, which is brew around Gifts Ungiven.
Well,
Well, there's.
I took this on about, I want to say about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and I brewed up a list kind of like this, but just with the sheer amount of stuff that's been printed and has entered modern from that time to now, I think it's probably time to pull it back out.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that sounds like something really sweet, and I'm very curious what you come up with.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, next on our list is the deck I was looking to brew, which I'm looking to do something tricky with Temur Ascendancy. Now, I've had a lot of decks where I've looked at in the recent, or a lot of strategies I've looked at recently, where I've been like, I need to give all of my things haste with an enchantment, just something I can lay out there, and then everything I play for the rest of the game has haste. And now, putting that different versions of that search into Gatherer, came across Temur Ascendancy a whole bunch of times,
Well,
and
there was a standard deck built around it back in KTK Standard.
yes, there was a standard deck built around it. My idea is to kind of play Temur Ascendancy as just a value play in a deck that's already trying to do something, rather than try and build everything around it. Now, the idea with Temur Ascendancy was you can loop Temur Sabertooth, Voyaging Satyr with Nykthos, and
Got a whole ton of mana.
yeah, and get a whole bunch, loop with, 2 mana to play Voyaging Satyr, 2 mana to activate Nykthos for like 7, I think is what they needed, and then you produce 6 to untap it with Voyaging Satyr, and then bounce it back with Temur Sabertooth and get that whole loop going.
That loop costs 6 mana, where you're getting 7 from is so that you net 1 mana each time you loop it.
Yes. So there's probably cheaper ways to do that, but the more interesting thing I'm looking at is just putting together a list that has just a lot of low power or low cost four drops.
Like the new
Two
one that was just printed.
stuff, yeah, stuff like Blood Rage Brawler, where it's a 4/3 for 2, but when it enters, you discard a card. But with Temur Ascendancy out, it says whenever a creature with power 4 or more enters the battlefield, you can draw a card. So basically, you can play Blood Rage Brawler, and it enters, you have to discard a card, yeah, but if you have a Temur Ascendancy out, you discard a card and then you just draw a card. Or
Well,
disc.
and you could stack both triggers so that
You.
you draw a card and then discard a card.
Yeah, so it basically says you loot, so it becomes an upside on Blood Rage Brawler.
Right.
Stuff like Frostwalker, which is one in a blue for a 4/1 elemental that when it becomes the target of spell or ability, you sacrifice it. So it's got the illusion effect. But
Good old Frosty.
it's still a 4/1 for 2.
Oh yeah, he was sweet in KTK Limited.
Other things are like Sheltering Ancient, which is a 2 mana 5/5 that has with trample, that has a cumulative upkeep of, put a 1/1 counter on a creature opponent controls. So if they get it has haste and draw a card, that's huge.
Yep.
The main thing though that I wanted to do this with is Vexing Devil, which Vexing Devil is already
Oof, yeah.
a played card. Giving it an extra upside is just gasoline.
Yep.
So putting something like that together, there's also the idea of you can create an infinite combo. Well, there's already infinite combos with 4 mana cards, or not 4 mana cards. There's already the infinite combo that's with Temur Ascendancy that, Voyaging Satyr, Nykthos, and Temur Sabertooth. There's probably other cards that are similar to Temur Sabertooth. Jesus, I can't say that for the life of me.
Yeah, so there actually might be cards in Modern that other cards in Modern that let you bounce your own creature.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking, is that there's other creatures in Modern that work like Temur Sabertooth.
Probably cost less.
Yeah. That you can just kind of throw in a combo, but mostly what you're trying to do with it is just get value out of the fact that you have a teamer ascendancy, and not really necessarily try and go for the full-on combo, but go for a more value-centric
Right.
version of it, where you're kind of an aggressive deck, you're kind of a, you're kind of a combo-y deck, a value deck, where yeah, if you have this down, you can just get them, but if you don't, you're still playing above the curve creatures.
Right.
Oh wow. So a card I just found is Cosmic Larva. It's one red for a 7/6 with trample.
Nice.
At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice it unless you sack two lands. Can you imagine that with haste and draws a
Oh
card?
yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, get in. Get in.
Esperzoa, 4/3 flyer. At the beginning of your upkeep, return an artifact you control to its owner's hand. So you could just like keep bound. This could just keep returning to your hand every turn and replay it out and just get them. Exemplar of Strength's another thing where that every time that enters, you can put three counters on something else, and it's a 4/4 with haste. I mean, there's a lot of things that just. Oh.
Exemplar of Strength gives minus one counters.
Yeah, I know. You could put them on something else, theoretically. Or not.
You could, but that is an enters the battlefield trigger, so it'll still enter the battlefield as a 4/4.
So even if it
So
puts the.
even if it puts the counters on itself, you'll still get to draw a card.
Oh right. Okay. So that's extra good. You also have like ball lightnings, like Groundbreaker and actual ball lightning.
Yeah.
Those are neat. Combat Celebrant would be interesting in this. I mean, just getting in there with some stuff that is big and has minimal downsides, like Ock, OKK is one in a red for a 4/4, but it can't attack unless there's a creature with greater power also attacks and can't block for the same reason. So that's probably not the best thing to do, but you can, there's a whole bunch of other things that you can be done with it. A Prowling Serpipard is a decent one.
Yep. Make sure your stuff can't be countered.
Savage Knuckleblades, where you
Big
can,
Nux.
yeah, we can go for the whole Khans of Tarkir block modern
Yeah.
deck.
Block constructed.
Oh, Vexing Sphinx would be fun. One blue for a 4/4 flyer with a cumulative upkeep of discard a card, but when it dies, you draw a card for each age counter on it.
That's neat.
Woolly Thokdar, not really in teamer, but maybe we could splash white. We're already a bit janky already, so why not? No, I think that would just be like a neat value deck where you're just playing a lot of cards that are under the curve
The
already.
only, the only, well, I'm worried about two things is A, it seems like it might lean too heavily on Teemer Ascendancy,
So,
but that we're gonna see if that plays out in the gameplay.
yeah, see, like the plan is to be playing just big beaters already that can get in for a lot, but then also not so like you already have a substantial board presence, whether or not that you have Teemer Ascendancy down, and if you have Teemer Ascendancy down, everything just goes so much smoother. Like
Right.
a lot of these have like downsides of either being defender or discard a card. Those kind of things are discarding a card's not necessarily the worst thing, and there could also be a discard card's synergy.
Well, and the other thing I'm worried about is your mana base. Your mana base is going to be stretched pretty thin if your engine is a three color multicolor card.
Yeah, but you mean you have the modern mana base, and that means that you get a lot more, a lot.
Yeah, but you also have the modern things like Blood Moon and Ghost Court.
Yeah, but being that there's going to be a base, it's going to be base red, probably base red and green. They can usually deal with Blood Moons pretty well. Also, putting stuff on like Utopia Sprawls as like a non-creature ramp
Right.
might be another way to and also a way to go with it. I mean, the main thing would be to find a source of card advantage.
So one quick thing about Utopia Sprawl is that it says enchant forest. So if you enchant a non-basic forest and they play a Blood Moon, Utopia Sprawl falls off.
True, true. Eh, I mean, maybe you would play a little bit more forests, or maybe don't go down that route. I mean, there's always the classic of just falling on the basic, birds or nobles, birds of paradise. It just like creates one of any mana. It's a 5-color land for one. Like, the only thing that you run with that run risk with that is that it could just get bolted and killed or
Right.
pushed. But
How do you push a bird that's in full flight?
when you push it, you crumple its wings so it can no longer fly, and then it falls.
I guess.
It's really brutal. I mean,
Collectively brutal,
I
even.
was just literally going to say that. You beat me to the punch.
Ha! Got him.
Yeah, no, that's what I want to do with Temur Ascendancy. I think it would be really fun. I don't know how great it would be. It might be something where I don't know. It might be something where the high cost creatures are a little bit less impactful.
So at least when this card was in standard, now obviously there was more of an emphasis on the combo aspect of it, but it was also a decent mid-range deck that just used Temur Ascendancy if it couldn't combo off. So the problem that it ran into was that Temur Ascendancy just hits the battlefield and just does nothing until you can play another card.
Yeah, it's a do nothing enchantment, definitely. But depending on how you build the deck, you can either play it later and get value out of it, or try and ramp into it and play it on turn two so that you're only taking turn two off to do things. Also,
Right.
if you have a bunch of three drops, Collected Company would probably not be bad in this deck either. Especially if you limit it to things that are under three mana.
Right, because Temur Ascendancy doesn't care if you cast the creature, it's just if it enters.
Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about playing things like Force of Savagery, the 8/0.
Well,
Things that are just actively bad.
let's not be hasty here. It's still a 4-power creature and it's still entering the battlefield.
No, Sean, I'm playing Temur Ascendancy. I'm trying to be hasty. That's the whole point of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're trying to be hasty. I don't know. I think this is kind of a deck I'll have to build as like a one-ofs deck, and then see which ones actually work well, and
And
then
which ones are not as good?
yeah, and then which ones are terrible, and then cut it down to that. I mean, the whole idea of being able to draw a card every time something hits the battlefield is great. The whole idea of all your big things having haste is great. And the idea of playing big things that are under costed sounds also great too. Like, even stuff as simple as like a 4/1 for three. Like, that doesn't sound that great. But think about that in modern. Like, a 4/1 for three, all right, this sounds still pretty bad. But it can tussle with their 4/4s for three. It can also die from a Lingering Soul's token, but
Yeah, it can also just run into a Death Shadow.
It can also just run into a Death Shadow, but hey, maybe that Death Shadow is only a 3/3 or a 4/4.
Maybe.
It can, if it's only a 4/4, it can make it into an 8/8. You have to look at the.
It can do that. That is a thing that can happen.
Yeah. You're not looking at all sides of this coin, Sean.
No, I'm not. I'm only looking at the two sides that are obvious.
This is true. But there's one really thin side where everything works out well.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
How is Magical Christmas Land this time of year?
Dude, I love Magical Christmas Land. It's the best place to brew in because
Good,
everything
yep.
works out correctly just as you drew it up.
Well, it's like doing physics in Ideal Physics Land.
Yeah, which is actually impossible to replicate. All right. Well, I think that's about all I have to say about that. I'll try throwing something to get together. Maybe we'll get to it next week, or maybe not. I've also got a couple other ideas floating around. This standard's not going to last forever, So there might be some standard things we want to brew with.
Yeah, with having only what, a month left in the life of these standard cards. Or I guess it's closer to 2 months. 2 months till rotation. I'm kind of skittish about brewing anything in standard.
I think
Maybe like a rotation proof deck, but we're gonna have to see what's in Ixalan.
Ixalan coming out is kind of what dictates what are the better rotation proof decks. I mean, but things like Teemer Energy kind of style decks aren't going anywhere because that's Kaladesh block
Right,
constructed
because
basically.
most of those cards are going to be from Kaladesh because the mechanic came from and was only ever printed in Kaladesh.
Yeah, but I mean, there's stuff like that. I also like the idea of just putting together a monocolor deck just to, see how far an individual color can go and kind of do like a budget kind of thing that way. And that's neat and all, but the current best deck in the meta is a mono red
Mono
deck
red.
and then also a mono black deck. And then the other monocolored things are Eldrazi decks, which are, playing with the Eldrazi.
I've been playing around with a mono color deck. So, well, in the last standard I was playing mono white Bonyment, so.
I think that well, it's always like a good route to go down, especially early in a format, but since we're already late enough into this format where we know mono red is yes good, it's good to explore the mono color decks to see if
Well,
they.
and the standard is far from solved.
Oh yeah, this standard's very far from solved. And there are some big targets on things that are aggressive, which are usually pretty easy to fight against. But that just means, consideration in deck building, which it's always key about what you're going up against.
Yeah,
And just.
just because a deck does super well at the Pro Tour doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best deck of that standard. It just makes the meta shift against it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a Pro Tour is a tournament of like 400 to 500 people.
I think it's even less than that.
Yeah, but just, it doesn't. And we talked about this when we talked about the Pro Tour, but yeah, it doesn't actually mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. I mean, it means that like these decks are viable, and every deck they play is a viable deck. But just because they played it doesn't mean it's the best version of that deck. Like, look at the modern Pro Tour with Oath of the Gatewatch, where a blue-red Eldrazi deck won the whole thing, but then Bant Eldrazi has just turned out to be the more powerful deck.
Well, wasn't that the Pro Tour where it was the colorless Eldrazi deck
Yeah, the colorless Eldrazi deck was also in that Pro
that
Tour, so.
used Simian Spirit Guides that taught everybody, hey, Eye of Ugin and Eldrazi Temple is just absolutely busted.
No, that was a broken format, but even before they banned Eye of Ugin, the white versions of Eldrazi were popping up, and it wasn't until then Eldrazi turned from, blue red to, I think it was blue white.
I believe black white existed before.
Black white existed before the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
And then it was blue red and also mono colorless, which went to green white or green blue or Bant, and then now it's back to mono colorless but with Tron lands. So
Yeah, so formats are always evolving.
yeah, that's the main takeaway from that gibberish I just said right there.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well, I think that's going to bring this episode of Brewing with Brewskies to a close. Couple things. Follow us on Twitter at BWBMTG for announcements about shows, when the show's going up, and this, that, and the other thing. Also, there's the weekly puzzles, which just posted that today, but right before recording, so that should be a fun one. Yeah, other than that, not much going on with the Twitter. I should probably do more with that. You can also email us at Gmail at brewingwithbrewskis@gmail.com. Hit us up with any concerns or,
Sarcastic remarks.
sarcastic remark.
Tell Doug he sucks.
Yeah, tell me, hey. Other stuff like that, or just hit us up to talk. We're lonely. I'm lonely. If you want to talk, say anything, hit us up on Gmail or the Twitters or whatever. I think that's about all for us today. I've been Doug,
I'm Sean.
and we've been Brewing with Brewskis. Good night, everybody. Cheers.